It is no secret that the technology industry has a challenge with diversity and inclusion. Information technology, also called IT, is one of the many fields within technology that must address this critical issue.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Today, I'm talking to Contrell Davis about IT. Contrell started working on computers at the age of 10, can you believe that? And has been working as a professional in the field of IT for over 26 years. He talks to us about some of the challenges of the industry for people of color and offers solutions on what socially responsible companies can do to develop and attract more African Americans and Latinos to IT. Born in Brooklyn, New York, Contrell grew up in Alabama and Detroit. He has lived in several cities, Charleston, South Carolina, Corpus Christi, Texas, and Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And now he lives in Phoenix, Arizona. Contrell has served as on the first Navy battleships with women on board, and most of his professional career has been in the IT profession. He owned a computer business at the age of 20, and he is the first African-American man to work for Alabama One. Good afternoon, Contrell. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone.
Thank you, Ramona. Good evening to you as well. How's it going?
I'm going well. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure.
So today, I'm so excited to have you. And before we get started, I just always like for my guests to connect with our audience. So let's start by you telling us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, Ramona, I like to describe myself as a system or a program child. I'm one of the earlier recipients of like the welfare system, as they say it today. I was born to a teen mother. My grandmother, born in Brooklyn, New York, born to a teen mom. My grandmother assumed custody of me when I was about five or six. We moved from Brooklyn, and my grandmother moved me to Alabama on a farm in a small town there. During that time, we lived on the farm, and until I think I was about 11. At 11, my grandmother decided that she wanted to move to Detroit, and she and I moved to Detroit. And from that, I grew up there in Detroit until 17. And then I joined the Navy. And from there, I worked every day after the Navy, and here I am.
Wow. So you, man, I didn't know you were a country boy, too. I mean, I'm from the country, and you went from the north to the south, back to the north. Wow.
North, South, and Midwest. Yeah, Midwest.
We Southerners, anything above the Mason-Dixon line is the North, not the Midwest. It's just the North and the South. That's it.
Yep. Sweet tea and unsweet tea.
Yes, that's it. That's it. Nothing in between. Nothing in between.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So today, I have you on. You're going to tell us all about the information technology industry, which is also referred to as IT. So before we get started into you talking about your experience in IT, can you explain to our audience what is IT? What is information technology?
Well, information technology, it is comprised of a lot of different branches of technology, basically. Basically, you have individuals who have knowledge about a certain aspect or subject dealing with technology that either improves business or improves personal lives. And this knowledge allows them to exploit that technology to implement in both, like I said, business and personal life to make things more convenient. Even you and I, you know, speaking on a Zoom call, you had to have some aspect of IT, whether you did that personally or whether you have a staff that you put this together. You know, nevertheless, it includes it. It's literally in everything. You hear the term Internet of Things, that is a, you know, literally deployed through information technology. So, yeah.
So you being an African-American man, how did you get into IT?
You know, I've probably been in IT, let's see, if I'm 50 and that's 10, probably at least only one fifth of my life that I haven't been in some aspect of IT. For some of the computer nerds out there, they are familiar with Radio Shack, the people my age.
Radio Shack, man, Radio Shack, you're going back a minute, aren't you?
That's it. That's it. That's the classic joint there to get all of your tech needs satisfied. All the
blast
gadgets.
Blast from the past.
Absolutely. Love Radio Shack. Hated that Microsoft had to shut them down, but you know, blast from the past. But as I was saying, you know, when I was about 10 years old, my grandmother, she allowed me to pick three things from a Radio Shack catalog. And, you know, I would pick various things, microscopes, you know, video games, you know, this sort of thing. But in this particular year in the catalog, they had a pocket microscope. There was a video game that you could, you know, Pac-Man mini console game. And then there was a TSR-80 for the nerds out there that would be listening to your show. You know, the TSR-80 was a color computer too. Basically, it was a keyboard form factor, and a computer was comprised in a single footprint. And you connected this to your television, and you could do basic programming. And so my grandmother got me my three items, my microscope, my video game, and my TSR-80. And so it came with an instruction manual on how to do basic programming. You could change the colors on the computer, build video games, whatever. And that year, myself and two of my other good friends, we all got a TSR-80, and we would write programs and, you know, come to school and put them together. You know, and we were probably in the fourth or fifth grade when this was going on. And so, but my folks, they really couldn't afford to buy me the recorder. So I would have to like rewrite all the programs just to get the program to run or don't turn the computer off. Right. So, yeah. So that was my early start. I'd gotten out of computers because, you know, even in Detroit, you know, I had a neighbor. He had a Commodore 64, Commodore Omega for all the nerds out there. They know exactly what I'm talking about. And we would program and we would play video games, et cetera. And then I got out of it. I joined the Navy at 17, you know, but I played, you know, I worked with programs on the Commodore and all these other machines until that time as a hobbyist, because we all know that unless you were in a college somewhere, you know, the computer industry was not very big. It was going to be big. You could hear about it every once in a while. Mm-hmm. So when I got out, you know, another blast from the past is Circuit City. Hmm. You know, me as a 19-year-old veteran, I was in Circuit City one day with my wife at that time, and we were looking at a rack system. I was going to get a stereo system, Ramona. You know us guys. And so I had an 8-speaker, you know, Sony system, you know, with surround sound and all this other stuff. And my wife at that time, you know, she was like, hey, come over and take a look at this computer. And it was a compact Presario. This is more... coming on into the future for the computer nerds. But I got that compact Presario. And back then when you bought a computer, it'd show you how to change out the battery on the motherboard, all this other stuff. I'd read the manual, work shifts at a factory. And so I would, you know, I would read this manual on my 2 days off, and my 2 days on, I'd go to work. I'd take the manual in with me. And basically, I learned from there. I had an international correspondence course. I took that course and got CompTIA certified in A+ to repair machines. And then after that, I started a business, you know, and it was centered around cleaning computers only. And I sold like I put together a business package and sold like a contract at like 20. I go out to these cement contract people that had dust in their computers. And then I sold contracts, and I would go in and clean their computers quarterly, biannually or annually or whatever the contract said. And I was like, I can't believe they actually paying me for this. But, you know, Eventually, I started to work into like computer shops. I would go to shops and say, "Hey, man, can I work here?" You know, and you know, I was turned away a lot. But one guy with that desperate need, I told him, "Hey, look, I'll work for free in your shop." And so I started working in the shop, and you know, I got so good at the repairing the computers that he would take his Mazda Miata and he'd be gone, and I'd be running the job. And he and I, we had our partings, because at this time, you know, there was a networking, the networking that you see today, like you and I are able to connect and we talk with each other over Zoom. This was just on the crest of coming around. And so he and I, we sold a contract to Sylvan Learning Centers to actually build a network for them. So I put the proposal together because I've been studying networking and all this other stuff. And so we finished the proposal and it was a success. We installed everything. And I said, "Look, you know, I need to be your partner. I know the networking, of you
course,
know PC.
Of course."
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And so he was happy with that. I think it was $6 an hour he was paying me. And he was like, "No, I think you need to stay, you know, where you are." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, you know, I already got a business cleaning computers. So it looks like I'm about to get into PC repair and networking computers." Mm-hmm. And so I did that. Yeah, I did that. And that was a very, like I said, I had a very good time. I ended up selling the business, you know, later on, but that's pretty much how I got into it. And at that time, I worked at a factory again. And at the factory, a position came up in IT, and I had been studying for my Microsoft MCSEs for you nerds out here. So I literally went to Books a Million, another relic. doesn't exist anymore, right? So I found the books that I needed to study, and they said, "Hey, if you study this book and you get this cert, you can make $60,000 a year." And I was like, "No way," you know. So you know, I read the book, and sure enough, you know, I was able to get my MCSEs, and that's the birth of my corporate career. You know, I'd sold my enterprise business, and then in the factory that I had basically worked in since I was 19, I became a part of management. And then we hit the ground running with converting Novell systems to Microsoft. And for you nerds out there, Novell and Microsoft. And then it took off from there. Cisco routing, VoIP networks. You know, I resigned from there because I was ambitious as hell. And I joined the bank and we put in VoIP systems again, switching routing, T1s for you nerds, T1s going from frame relay, you know, circuits. And that's connecting computers around a city like a man. Did that and then into the software company where I worked 18 years and as a network architect and then a manager. A global system solutions, travel the world, literally been to about, I think it's 15 countries, 273 cities. Yeah, solving problems.
Wow, wow. Impressive career.
Yeah.
In your trajectory in IT. So thank you so much for sharing with us your story. And so when we look at IT, one of the things we hear a lot about is how our society is doing more to get African-Americans, Latinos, and people of color in the STEAM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math. And so considering that, we know that there are very few African-Americans, Latinos, and people of color in the industry. So can you tell us, you know, as an African-American man, what have been some of your challenges in the industry?
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned, and, you know, what we were just talking is that like when I would go door to door to break into the computer repair industry, you know, there are certain stereotypes that exist, like, you know, in the world you have like, you know, they always show the guy who's on the computer. He's got the thick glasses. He's there. And, you know, no offense to anyone, but they're usually Caucasian people. So with those embedded stereotypes, people don't readily see, you know, the African-American community as, you know, being a you know, being a computer person, they see us more into, you know, sports or, you know, I don't know, rapping or whatever it is. And so you asked like, what can we do to break into the field? Was that the question?
No, the question I'm asking is, you know, obviously, since there are not a lot of African-Americans and Latinos and people of color in the industry, what I'm assuming, right, that there are challenges that you've experienced as a Black man. So what are some of those challenges? And, you know, you just talked about the perception of African-Americans that we, you know, don't necessarily, people don't see us in the industry, but just you as an individual, what are some of the experiences that you've had that are challenging in terms of being an African-American man in the industry?
People, when you are in the industry, they see you, they're very curious for one, because they wonder, you know, the question that I get that I find amazing is, how did you get into the industry? You know, your question in this format is totally, you know, it's totally valid, because, you know, we're asking the question. But, you know, that's the, some of the challenges are, being able to understand where is the gateway that you actually get into the industry. And for me, it was, I read a lot of magazines, and like, it's not like it was like open. I found an article, and this article led me into Microsoft certifications. I happened to get a mail order card that actually had the international correspondence course that led to the A+ certification that I started with. So the information, it's all about having access to the information, and not that the information isn't plentiful for you to actually engage. Like there's plenty of books. There's, and now when I say that, I'm saying online courses that are free for coding. There's lots of information about you know, network engineering, like TCP/IP, which is a protocol that connects computers. All this information is there's a deluge of the information out there, but being able to construct it, right, to create an ottery that the person can begin a gateway and a trek to navigate a certain career path in IT. That constructed path is not there, but the deluge of information is out there. But where do you get started? And that was my challenge at that time. It was in books, and this sorts of things, but it wasn't readily available. Like, you know, there was no community center that said, hey, if you want to get an IT, here is a format that you can follow. And like I read that article about, hey, you can, you know, make 60K if you get this cert, right? That wasn't in an open forum where I could go in, you know, into a community center and get that information. And that was the challenge.
That makes so much sense. The lack of information, the lack of exposure to information is a better way to say it.
Yes.
That is one of the challenges that you had in terms of getting into the industry, you know, and that I would even argue that that's a challenge nowadays, is that people, you can't pursue a career in something that you know nothing or little about. And so exposure is a big challenge that you had as an African-American man, but because you had this piece of information, this article, it opened you up to the opportunities in the field. So my second question or follow-up question is, now you're in the field, right? So do you experience challenges as an African-American man in the field of IT?
Oh, absolutely. I guess this will be a slight detour, but even just in the last like year or so, you know, I've been working for a business, you know, some 18, 19 years. And, you know, it time came up for like a director position, and like literally like CEOs and CIOs I worked with over the company years said, this is the guy that you want to lead this department. But, you know, the business decided that it wanted to go another way. And so, you know, there was no, you know, clear rhyme or reason, you know, involved in that. But, you know, I was clearly the most senior, you know, engineer globally. As well as, you know, in the U.S., but, you know, again, not fitting some of the stereotypes, I believe, played, you know, a big role in that. Now, for me and for anyone else listening to the show, that's not a big deal to me. If a business decides that, you know, hey, you know, we want to go another way, then they can do that. But my answer to that was that I felt that I was ready for a director role and position, and really beyond that. So what you do is you seek out an organization that that is open to that, and that's exactly what I did. So, you know, no need in like crying about things like that. You're gonna face those challenges. You know, if you are a minority in today's society, you have to get used to that. You know, fall in love with the struggle, as they say, and then you go somewhere that is more open to that. You know, and so yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense that, you know, sometimes we, like any other industry, that we don't necessarily have the opportunities to move up like we would like. And so we have to accept that and then make decisions on our own in terms of what we want to do in our individual lives and professional careers. So moving on, you know, to the discussing, we discussed the lack of African-Americans and Latinos in the industry. And one of the reasons is because of the lack of information and exposure, which you talked about. But, you know, I do believe when you talk about social impact, that industry has to do much more to develop African-Americans and Latinos and people of color in the IT area, in the IT industry. So what type of recommendations or suggestions would you have to industry to attract more African-Americans and Latinos in the IT industry?
I think that's a wonderful question, Ramona. And I'm going to say that CIT, like say we can call the medical environment, like the medical industry, we can call that an institution, right? But IT itself, it's not an institution yet. It is an industry that quite frankly, if you've got a small business, you want to start a business nowadays, you got an enterprise organization, you have got to have an IT department. So in this particular instance, with information technology, it's going to be left to the corporations to, in their respective regions, whether their footprint is global, whether it is within a particular country or it is regional, to kind of step out and look into their community centers and start to promote this information, these gateways, the things that they're looking for in an IT department. The challenge there is that we are in, Ramona, you know, we are in what they call an information deluge. So the information is out there. It's a flood of it. It's almost too much information available. And we've got a smart device in just about every, you know, Latino's hand. If you're Afro, you're Asian or whatever, everyone has a smartphone. The smartphone has the power of a mainframe that we had back in the day. It can do way more. So we need to, industry or the corporations should put out, this is the blueprint IT person that we're looking for. And also, here are the sites that match this information that you need to consume in order to become that blueprint of a character so that we'll be looking to recruit that. So I think that's what they can do in their regional areas, in community centers. They can provide kiosks, you know, something like this, which, you know, gives people a navigational map whether it be online or even workshops that they can sponsor for the summer, you know, for younger kids. And then also you have bring your kid to work day. Well, you can extend that into, sponsor a kid from the community center, come to work day. There's a lot of stuff that can be done in that, you know. Even your show kind of inspires me to get back into some of the mentorship that I started back at the previous employer that I worked with.
You know, those are some great ideas. And, you know, that's what we do here at Kaliwa Strategies in Absolutely. Terms of being a social impact agency, is that we help organizations to develop their strategic plans to reach and attract more African-Americans and Latinos. And much of this work also is very closely related to diversity, equity, and inclusion work, right? Because right. IT departments have to be, they have to be empowered, if you will, to do the type of strategic programming that will allow them to reach, attract, and serve more African-Americans and Latinos.
Yeah. And you bring up a point that I want to try and make as well, because when I'm, traveling globally and say in different countries, if you will, the faces, are diverse. You know what I mean? So when we're speaking about diversity, when we look at it from a global aspect, you know, one could argue that, there are lots of, different faces. But when we home in on the country, say the U.S., that's when we start to see that diversity kind of shave off. There is a lack of, like you said, Afro, there's a lack of Latino, presence in those rooms, particularly in the higher up positions, directors, CIOs, managers, even, for a while, it took a long time for me to break the glass to get into the management field, even though I'd been a top-notch, engineer and network architect, designing systems that they deploy globally in the business. It was just difficult to bust that ceiling out. And then, furthermore, even to go into the director role, I literally had to, I had to make a decision to move on to a business that were more open for that, again, these are things that you have to make a decision, career decisions to engage in,
I'm so glad you put all of that in perspective in terms of the difference of what IT looks like nationally and globally. Yes, globally, it might be diverse, but nationally is not. It is not. And that's why it's so important for companies to be strategic and intentional in their diversity, equity, and inclusion and accessibility work, DEI&A. And so when you look at DEI&A, like you just stated, yes, we need more in the workplace, more people of color in the workplace and have the opportunity to work in IT fields, but it also has to go with equity, right? In terms of opportunities, which you just talked about your own personal experience in promotion, that we need to be on all levels of an organization. And so that's why it's so important for organizations, institutions, businesses to get the assistance they need in doing DEI&A work and doing their strategic plans. And so that's what we do as an agency. So last question, as we wrap up our interview, here at the Empowerment Zone, as we're all about empowerment and impact. So social impact is what we're truly about promoting. So what types of projects do you feel corporations can engage in to advance social impact through their IT departments?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, as I was touched on before, it's going to be left to those corporations to set up those summer programs for, for kids that would be normally running around, set up an IT workshop. It doesn't always have to be, and again, I'm not being critical of what's been done in the athletic community, like where people are setting up foundations and they're building basketball courts. And, I am not being critical of or insensitive to that work that's been done. But I think that we can promote also brain work, right?
That's it.
Brain
That's
work,
it.
you know what I mean? Because everybody, I told you I was a child of the program. I came up working in supply chain factory, and I bring a certain flavor to IT that otherwise would not be taken advantage of. So these children who have these walks of life and perspectives, they can make a social impact once they are in the field based on their experience, and they can make an impact even in the technology field, because the experience is going to bring a certain flavor. It's going to mix up things and not make it so so bland. And we don't know what the possibilities are, but I do know that every bit of my experience as a human being coming up, I employ every bit of that in this industry, and it has been impactful to the businesses that I've worked for over the years. So start with that summer program. If the athletes out there that you sponsor are listening, hey, build a brain house, instead of a basketball court. These things, we have beautiful minds in the African American communities, the Latino communities. It has been proven through the contribution of our history, over history, and I'm saying our history as a society. Though every time you introduce or you pollinate, the minority groups into these industries, they are impactful, whether they're sports wise, whether it's STEM work or whatever it may be. So we need to continue that trend. A lot of people look at people, migrants and things like this, but there is internally untapped brain power in those communities. I'm living proof of it. So, yeah.
I love that idea. We can have summer programs, right? And I like the I really like how you put it, build a brain house. We, yes, that's not to discredit basketball courts, like you say,
No.
because we do need those, but we also need places that can really engage the brain power of the African American and Latino communities, because we have
Absolutely.
so much untapped brain power, as you stated. And
Yeah,
so
and let that.
go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and let me say this. I can chop up the basketball court too. I came up playing in the streets of Detroit. I mean, I can chop up the court. I can play some golf. I was a very, very avid baseball player. So, we can create balance between the physical and
Yes.
the psychological and the mental. I can say this is that as I'm 50 or approaching 50, the physical has dropped off, but my mental capacity is
That's
only
it.
increased, so yeah.
And I'm glad you stated that it's all about balance. And so when we build our programs, you corporations out there who are really into social impact and really want to make an impact on the community, think about other types of creative programming that can develop people's minds within the African American and Latino community. And like I said before, the Colorado Strategies, which is my agency, we're all
Absolutely.
about social impact,
Absolutely.
and we empower businesses to come up with programming. We develop your programming so that you can
Yes.
make a social impact.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with hey, you play a 2 hours of basketball, you come in and you do some coding. Now that's taking care of
That's
the
it.
mind and
That's
the
it.
body. Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, Contrail.
Anytime, Ramona. Very, very, very glad that you asked me to be on. If you need me in the future, I'm available.
the last segment of my show is always dedicated to giving students strategies for college success. And I know you're in college now and you're a non-traditional student. So can you tell us what piece of advice you would give students for college success?
Absolutely. The first question, the first, advice I'm going to say is if you just got out of high school, get your butt in college as soon as possible, because, over my lifetime, I've always had to kind of fit school in on the side, and I'll continue to do that. I love education so much that I'll probably be a lifetime student. I'm always trying to perfect the craft, not only just in IT, but, I get into sociology, philosophy, really things that, again, brain work, right? So for the young kids out there, get in school and you start out there and go on and get your master's degree, because what you don't want to experience is some of what I experienced was the fact that a lot of these positions, they require, like CIOs and, directors, they require a formal education. And quite frankly, Ramona, I agree with them. Once I started school, I have a lot of respect for the four-year institution. I didn't before. I thought I could cert my way in, but, that's not, it's sufficient, and you can work yourself out of the poverty sector, if that's where you are. That'll provide you a wonderful career. And if you're satisfied doing that, no reflection on my cert brothers out there. But if you want to attain and break that glass mirror to manage, and be effective at that, there are just theories, and there's education upon education that diagram this stuff out. Not saying that, you have to be a natural at this anyway, but there's a technical and a theoretical aspect to it that I never would have gotten if I hadn't gone through a four-year institution. It just makes me more effective. And so for those young kids out there, get out, get your education, and then go into your field of study, or do them at the same time, but don't neglect the four-year institutions.
That is great advice, is to make sure for those of you who can, don't take a break. When you finish high school, go on and go to college. That piece of advice is great. And then secondly, make sure after you finish your Bachelor of Arts or Bachelor of Science degree,
get that master's degree. Get it. Yes, get it.
So thank you so much, Contrell Davis, for joining us on the Empowerment Zone. You've been a fantastic guest, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you, Ramona. Talk to you later.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.